Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
AI is incredible. It can teach you how to fry an egg and even write a poem, pirate style. Yarr! But it knows nothing about your work. Slackbot is different. It doesn't just know the facts. It knows your schedule. It can turn a brainstorm into a brief. And it doesn't need to be taught. Because Slackbot isn't just another AI. It's AI that knows your work as well as you do. Visit slack.com/meet Slackbot to learn more.
Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. They offer just about every battery under the sun, from car and truck batteries to batteries for your trail cameras and rangefinders. Select retail locations even offer cell phone repair and cracked screen repair. Find a local retail location at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
When in the field, accuracy and precision count. That's why we switch our slug guns to rifled barrels, tune our arrows, and use a fish finder on the water. But why should our drive for control end there? The Tapiq line of meat probes gives an instantaneous look at the temperatures of our prized meals, both internal and in the cooking chamber. Tapiq uses sturdy hardware made and assembled here in the U.S., along with their user-friendly, sophisticated software that connects to your smart device. Whether it's a traditional corded probe or the new cordless air probes that give you a wealth of freedom where wires would just get in the way, adding a Tapiq meat probe can significantly help in getting to that medium rare on venison or waterfowl, ensuring your upland bird stays moist, or even charting your long cooks on a smoker. Visit tapiq.com or find the link in the show notes and use the code HUNT10, all uppercase, at checkout to save 10%. Adding a probe to your kit can make you one tap away from your cue. Welcome to the Hunt of War podcast, powered by Sportsman's Nation, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it.
This is episode 78, Mateen Putellas with Hunt to Eat.
On this episode of The Huntivore, Mateen Putelis, CEO of Hunt to Eat, joins Nick for a chat about a wild foodie's favorite fashion wear. Hunt to Eat started as just a t-shirt company that has blossomed into an organization whose mission encompasses community, real food, and conservation. Mateen opens up about his start in the outdoors as a kid, how the phrase food for fuel relates to his upbringing, a love of photography leads to getting behind the rifle, and reveals some incredible new content coming from Hunt to Eat. All this and more on the next episode of Huntivore. Well, hey, good afternoon, folks. Welcome to another episode here of the Huntivore. Man, it's really getting sticky here, late part of July here in Michigan. Humidity has been up. The mosquitoes have also found their way into the woods. It's constant trying to beat those things off. Really soupy, but at the same time, it's summer, so we got to enjoy it while we got it. This afternoon, I am joined by the CEO of Hunt to Eat. I am joined by Mateen Putelis, who happened to just finish earlier this month his ultra marathon. Mateen, congratulations. What did it feel like to run 100 miles straight?
It was good. Yeah, it was a solid effort. I was well prepared and actually was able to beat my goal time by about 40 minutes. So that was unexpected. If you match your A goal expectations, you're doing pretty well. So I was kind of blown away to go 40 minutes faster and, pumped to go under 24 hours. I was right at 20 hours and 48 minutes. So yeah, it was a good day out. It was a good day in Michigan. I had, not seen that part of my home state where I grew up. So, it was kind of fun. We ran from the Mission Point, lighthouse down the peninsula and then back up towards Petoskey to the Petoskey Lighthouse. So yeah, pretty beautiful course.
Yeah. That whole section of Traverse City, Petoskey, even Ludington, a little bit further south, just wonderful, wonderful scenery. Was this something that have you been a runner, or was this just one of those things where you were like, you know what, I want to jump in and slowly work my way up to 100 miles, or has running been a thing that you've enjoyed for many years?
Well, I would say that the 8 years that I've been running consistently, it's taken me that 8 years to get to 100 miles. I know a lot of folks, jump in and do it a lot sooner, but it took me a while to get to that point. But I actually attempted my first 100 miler last summer, when all the races got canceled due to the old COVID. And I'm actually made it 80 miles on my own. Much different course here in Colorado, of course, a lot more elevation gain and whatnot. But, so it took me a while to get to it. And, I'm definitely not over. Of course, that was mostly a road marathon, ultra marathon. So I'm pumped to get out back on the trails and try one here, probably in Colorado or somewhere more elevation, a little bit tougher. So.
Gotcha. It just got your palate wet at this point. You're looking for more. That's great.
Yep.
I just like with everybody, you start on a bike, pedal bike. And then, we did some of the trails down here as younger, but yeah, I've last year during the whole COVID mess up, or 2 years ago, I guess, I ended up getting a fat tire bike and then jumping into mountain biking. And like you said, that little bit of getting off the beaten path and being in something that's a little more wild, something that's a little more challenging, really does add a fun element. So yes, a way step back from say 100 miles, but at the same time, I like where you're going on the intensity bit, where you're looking for something a little more challenging to up the fun aspect.
Totally. Totally. Roads have been okay during COVID, mostly just to kind of be away from people, but I definitely prefer the trails. So yeah, excited to get back out there. That's not actually true. During the hunting season, probably I'll still get out, but I'm actually dealing with a pretty bad back injury right now. So I apologize if I sound a little loopy. I'm on a couple muscle relaxants and some prednisone right now, but I'll try to stay focused for the crowd out there.
Good work. Yeah. Well, if you sound out, we'll just wait for you to get back.
Yeah.
So yeah, jumping into a little bit of our discussion here, you know, loving to run outdoors. What was your introduction to the outdoors? Was that something that you were self-motivated in doing, or just being in your family? Was it really something that was presented to you, like, hey, we are an outdoor family and we do this?
So I'd say we were latchkey kids growing up. So we just, and there was definitely green space around us growing up in Kalamazoo. So we did that on, you know, on our own right. Just, we were always out. We were out on bikes and out in the bushes and building forts and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And ultimately I was, we were pretty involved in Boy Scouting. We had a Latvian Boy Scout troop in Kalamazoo that, was pretty active. So I'd say that's probably where I got my actual start in being outside all the time. We also, given our Latvian heritage, we spent a lot of time at a kind of, well, I call the, it's a camp resort kind of thing down in Three Rivers. So we were just always outside there as well. So between the two of those things, and then, you know, my dad was a hunter growing up. We didn't really get along, so I didn't spend much time with him in the woods, but we still got out enough to like, learn a little thing or two about hunting. We certainly ate plenty of, you know, deer growing up. And we were out there building blinds with them and stuff like that, looking at sign and whatnot. So I definitely got a taste for it, even though I didn't start hunting until about 12 years ago. So, I started much later in life, compared to my brother, who was kind of my dad's right-hand man growing up. So, yeah.
Well, good. It's fun to know that, you know, you can start at any time. You know, 10 years now? Yeah. So I'm kind of in the same boat as you, is that it was not too long after I finally got like my career job. I was like, hey, I have free time now. I want to jump into the hunting that, you know, my buddies have been doing this whole time. But now that I got the free time, I want a chance to do that. And I'm sure it was a steep learning curve, especially for somebody who moves, because you grew up here in Michigan and now you've moved out west. What was that learning curve to, you know, learning how to hunt deer in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and then turn around and now be like, oh man, this is a whole new beast out here?
Well, yeah. So I actually did. I've never hunted deer in Michigan. I've only hunted now, having been grown up. I've hunted some ducks. Yeah. I did a big photo shoot out there. So we hunted ducks with that, a couple of years ago, but, yeah, so I just moved to Arizona to go into college after a couple of years of community college. So it really wasn't until I moved, done with that, kind of done with 7 years of guiding work. And then I finally settled in kind of in Colorado near my brother. So it was only then, which is 12 years ago, that I started to hunt. So it was good to have, obviously, for folks who know kind of our family, the Patel's family, they know my brother. So him being the big game hunting guide and whatnot, you know, I kind of had it easy. I had a professional guide who was taking me out to teach me how to hunt. So, I think I dodged a few bullets there, and, my learning curve was ramped up really fast, thanks to him.
Yeah, if there ever wasn't a cheat code, is to have your brother be Giannis. But yep. Not carrying a rifle, I would say your first love was photography. So you were shooting, but it wasn't necessarily bullets or arrows at this point. Was it more adventure sport that you got into doing the photography, or were you into shooting landscapes, wildlife? Where was your photography taking you?
You know, it's been kind of ongoing. Actually, that's probably the first prize I ever won was actually, in a big scout camp. They gave every kid, and I was probably, boy, I was 8 or 9 years old. They gave every kid a point and shoot, you know, not for everyone listening. It's like, you got to think back to the days before digital. You know, you wound up the little camera and you had 24 shots and took the picture, right? And so they give every camper one of these things, and there was probably some 300 campers there, and I actually won the grand prize of like the best photo as a little 8-year-old.
No way. I'm one of those little cardboard sheathed cameras. Those are Oh man, those were so cool. You press the button to charge the flash if you needed to check the flash at that point.
Right. Yep, totally. So yeah, I won a Fuji camera, a Fuji point and shoot camera at that point that was still a film camera. And so I think from then on, I kind of just felt like I had a good eye for photography. So, you know, I did photography kind of in high school as the photo editor for the school newspaper, all that kind of stuff. And then I tried a few times actually early on to start a business around photography, and it didn't really pan out. And then it took a while to into my 20s to finally, or my late 20s, to actually kind of figure out, you know, my skill set as an adventure, kind of sports adventure guy, you know, from being a big rock climber and just kind of being comfortable outside, and then comfortable on bikes and comfortable running. And ultimately was able to link up with some good mentors and work as a photo assistant for some bigger folks, where we actually got to shoot commercial shoots for, you know, kind of adventure brands. And so it was really then that I was able to build a portfolio and, you know, was able to get some clients and stuff like that. So it's been an ongoing learning for sure.
There's something, especially in the arts, where it's very subjective to make a business out of that. That's one of those like feast or famine things where, you know, once you, if you get people that really like it, like, hey, hot dog, we're onto something. But man, talk about a flooded market, because everybody that does get a camera is like, oh, I'm going to start a business with this. And sometimes it doesn't always work out.
Totally. It is often a race to the bottom. So if you're going to make money, it's pretty challenging. While I loved doing it for a few years, I definitely appreciate that that Hunt to Eat took over my time, and you know, I was lucky enough to build this brand kind of on the back of some of that work, and move on into being in it every day, you know, building out a t-shirt company and apparel company, and then building it into what we have going on these days, which is. There's a lot to talk about what we've got going on in the next month or so and going forward. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I was going to get into that, too. Like, Hunt to Eat, before we start breaking into the nitty-gritties about what it has become, just as an entrepreneur, was this just something you were like, hey, I want to offer something artistic to the hunting and angling crowd. I want to, you know, I want to jump into this t-shirt business, and then after that took off, is that where the plans began to make it what it is now, or was this one of those things where you had that idea of becoming more than a t-shirt business at the beginning, or is this just something that like all this is working now, let's go with it?
I think ultimately with every good idea, right, for every entrepreneur, they're always looking for, I think most folks start because they're looking for an answer to something that they, you know, something that bothers them or they don't have or they'd like to see better or whatnot, right? So, my brother and I had been working together for about, maybe a year or so at Meat Eater. And we really just saw the need for, to just want to be able to wear something that, you know, kind of fit our style, and felt good, and also had a good message, you know, around hunting. And so, we saw, you know, we've seen it kind of in the Patagonia is the thing we always kind of come back to. You know, that's, you know, if I'm wearing clothes generally these days, if it's not Patagonia, it's probably Hunt to Eat, or it's camo from Sitka or something like that. Right. But so we wanted something that had that Patagonia feel and had that, just quality feel. And also didn't have like, I don't know, the big box store kind of monikers that they put on hunting t-shirts these days that are still ongoing at those places. We just didn't want to promote that stuff anymore. We wanted to promote kind of the way we hunt or the reason why we hunt. So, so we were in some conversation, somebody came up with the idea of making a t-shirt around the idea of "We'll hunt for food." Kind of like a, you know, like the guy in the corner who says like, "We'll work for food" or whatever. We took that idea, and then ultimately that kind of just transformed into Hunt to Eat. At which point we never found a better slogan than that. And so we ran with it. But you know, like I said, I went to school to be a mountain guide or an adventure educator. So I really didn't have much knowledge about building a business, particularly not a t-shirt business, or what it took to print t-shirts or, you know, make designs or any of that stuff. But nonetheless, we jumped in and we went for it. And so, it took me about 3 years to get to a point where I quit doing everything else and worked, you know, solely on Hunt to Eat. But yeah, ultimately it was, the reason why is because we just wanted a better t-shirt. And there wasn't a place to find that at that time. I'm glad to say that, you know, 8 years later, there's, you know, all the big brands have caught on to the idea that, that good everyday apparel is something that they should be, you know, providing their customers. So it's fun to see that. It's fun to know that we played probably a pretty significant role in bringing that about in the hunting industry.
Good deal. Good deal. Yeah. I folded a lot of those big box store, t-shirts. I worked at Gander Mountain, and I can't tell you how many like big bucks and trucks, and you know, you're folding these things and you're looking at the back of it. You're like, honestly, like this isn't what it's about. And so, yeah, when, you know, I first got a hold of, some of the Hunt to Eat, t-shirt designs that were coming through, and then you guys started doing the states, it was like, wow, this rings home with exactly what I love to do as a hobby, something that I, you know, like to do as a lifestyle. Like, this represents me, not opposed to, you know, granted, some of the artwork on there was nice on these, some of these shirts, but at the same time, yeah, you were like, man, I feel like this message is completely off. So no, I think you hit the nail on the head when it came to niche market on that. Is I think there's a lot of people that were really crying, like you said, holding that sign that says "We'll hunt for food." There was a lot of people. I wouldn't even say, I've only been doing this podcast now for 3 years. We're starting year four now. And previous to me starting this, I kind of had that outcry for like, yeah, I want to find big bucks, but at the same time, I want to know how to cook my buck that I got last year, or well, I want to try something different with, you know, wild turkey that, you know, my buddy makes one recipe every time. Like, let's expound on that. Let's make something different. And to see that message kind of arise was really like something that I was like, yes, just arm pumping for and basically, you know, quote unquote, hungry for as things were developing.
Yep.
So now that this is like taken off, when did you really see like, man, I can take this Hunt to Eat and transform this not into just t-shirts, not into just wares, but you then expanded out into recipes, articles, and there's work on mentorship and hunt camps. When did that shift take over to Friley's? Like, all right, t-shirts is kind of how we push our name, but now this is what we want to be about.
Yeah. So I think there was, we started out right, and it was mostly myself, just, you know, we were lucky enough to have the endorsements of my brother and the kind of the Meat Eater show. Which was fantastic. That really definitely gave us a boost. And about 3 years in, my brother left the company, and, you know, to work just for Meat Eater, which ultimately was good because that gave me the opportunity to kind of, you know, figure out exactly the direction I wanted to push it in. But
yeah, two captains, you know, when, is always tough, especially when they're related.
Yep, totally. So I think similarly around that time, we really kind of leaned into the ambassador team. And so that was definitely a good way to build. Ultimately, I think we built community first, right? That's kind of been our big thing, is that I wanted to make it a space where everyone felt like they could come into hunting and be seen and heard and valued. And so that really meant having just a really diverse group of ambassadors who kind of spoke to the ethos of Hunt to Eat. So I'd say the community building came first, and then it really, you know, from there, and it was impressive that first like outreach to ambassadors. I don't know if I've said it out loud before on a podcast, but we put out the call for that. And within the first hour of asking for ambassadors, we had over 300 submissions. And everybody had to actually write a 500-word essay. So it was pretty incredible, just like the response, right, that we got from that. And so at that point, I think I really knew that we were onto something and people were paying attention. and we kind of rolled with that. So we rolled with that for the next, you know, 3 years or so. So kind of 6 years in, maybe six and a half years in, it was a lot of the food, you know, essentially engaging our community through kind of the eating of wild game. And then it's really been in the last like year and a half where we've redone the website now twice in the last year and a half. And then just really heavily focused on more editorial content about how to hunt and how to, you know, all the recipes, how to cook different things. We've, you know, leaned heavily into that. And then, yeah, just last fall, we did our first hunt camp in South Carolina. That was the first one. And then since then, we've done another four. And we've got another like 15 on the books, or yeah, 10 to 15 on the books for this fall as well. And that's just, it's just compounding now, and going into 2022, we'll have even more. So,
That's so cool.
Yeah. That was like a, like I said, I was an adventure educator, right? So my whole job was to take people outside and kind of use the out of doors as a context for how to, you know, how to be self-reliant and kind of how to do all those things, teaching people how to, you know, teamwork and all that thing. And, so it kind of seemed like a good return to home for me to build that out with Hunt to Eat, you know, with an education program. And I also just saw, you know, like myself, I might've grown up in a hunting family, but I definitely came to it much later. And so giving folks who don't come from hunting families, giving them the opportunity for essentially a welcoming space where they can ask any question they want, and they can kind of get really good education, good mentorship. It seemed like a good next step. Similarly, I think that just people in general these days are looking for more experiences that will kind of build them out as whole individuals. So, again, it's good business, and it's a good thing to do, and it's good business as well right now. So,
good deal. My educator heart. I'm a teacher by trade, so I'm right along with you. Where if I can bring someone along with that maybe didn't have that experience, or at the same time, like, to maybe shortcut some of my mistakes and be like, hey, listen, this is what I did wrong, and maybe you can miss that on the way to you becoming better. So that is incredible to hear that that is getting more and more attention being drawn to it.
Yep.
So yeah, that was that first pillar you were talking about, and I pulled those three pillars that you were talking about with Hunt to Eat, and that's community, real food, and conservation. How do those three, like standing alone, like you just mentioned the community aspect and how that was one that you built first, but how does all three of those really bring together your mission for Hunt to Eat? How are all three of those being applied?
Well, ultimately, I think that all three of those things are just, I think that any business ultimately, I try to say that as much as I can. I think any business in the entire world, no matter what you're about, I think that you should be focused, or you would be successful by focusing on those three things. So I think every human in the world wants more connection with the people around them. I think that them knowing where their food comes from is really important for not only their own health, but the health of the health of the world and the health of our ecosystems. And then ultimately, we say conservation because we're focused on hunting, but I think that nature is really that third pillar. And I think that most humans are happier and more grounded and better people when they are in connection with nature. It's definitely not something that it's not just for us. I think it's good for every business to kind of hone in on those things. It works well for us because there is so much, there's being out there and in getting real food, you bring that back to your community, and it builds a connection when you can share moments over around a table. And ultimately that builds, that respect for that food ultimately builds more respect for where that food comes from. And the ability to, you know, think about protecting those spaces. So, that's a
Gotcha. Yeah. And one thing I really do focus on too is like that real food aspect. So I really do center in on that as well. Food has been really important to not only my foundational upbringing, and maybe not even necessarily the actual like fuel that was sitting on my plate that I then shoved into my mouth, but at the same time, it was the whole atmosphere around the kitchen. What growing up and then even into now, like, what is your relationship with, say, with food right now? Is it something that you are seeing like as a fuel for getting through 100 miles, or is it something that you use more as like a conversation tool, as a way to present what you do? Is food something more than fuel to you? I guess that's my question.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's funny that you ask about like the food as fuel thing, particularly for 100 miles, right? When you're racing at that level of just exertion, it really comes down to just like what fuels a gas tank the best, and that ultimately there's all kinds of science around this, but some will scoff at this, but ultimately it's just a bunch of sugar. So it's pretty
the quick
pretty
glucose,
funny that,
eh?
Yeah, totally. So it's pretty funny, like. Whereas I try to eat rather healthy in general, on days that I'm racing like that, I'm honestly shoving candy bars and sugar down my system, to keep going. So, yeah, food is fuel. It's a little interesting. I'm not like in the paleo, I'm not into fads or diets or anything like that. So I'm pretty just well-rounded eater. You know, it's also an interesting conversation just about like what food means to me versus other folks. We grew up kind of poor. And so, you know, these days I'm actually more for me, while I appreciate all the good food I get to eat, I ultimately am more excited when I get to eat whatever food I want to eat versus necessarily the best food. Just because growing up poor, we didn't always have the opportunity to, you know, to drink real milk. Like we drink a lot of powdered milk and stuff like that. So it's interesting that I have this particular relationship with food where I'm just like, if I get to eat what I want to eat, I'm usually a happy, happy camper. And hopefully that's on the healthier side, but I won't say that I'm that perfect. Like I definitely, you know, I love there's certain things that I love that people would be like, why in the heck would you ever eat that? And it's like, well, because I can. Yeah. And that's just, you know, it's a little different than or it's particular to me, I guess.
That is that's a great perspective that I think somehow that I've kind of overlooked that at that point where it's like when you guys were bringing in food for the family or your parents were bringing in food for, you know, you kids as you're growing up, it was like, how many calories can we get? Like we want to put something on the table, and that is becoming difficult. Much harder, for your family as opposed to another family. So to be, I can almost see like that thankfulness level that you're going through where, you know what, hey, I get to have options today, or, you know, I get to choose something rather than just be happy with whatever has set right down there in front of you. That is a very, that's a very unique situation.
Yeah. It's funny because we grew up mostly living with my mom, with our parents being divorced early, so she was always cooking kind of crazy stuff that we didn't really like as kids. She was like super healthy, so she's always trying to push that stuff on us, and we didn't really like it. So she actually, at a certain point, she ended up just breaking out the budget. And as a very pretty young kid, like, and I think even like by third grade, we would go to the grocery store on Sundays, and everybody got their own envelope of food money. And we kind of bought food on our own, which is, I mean, I don't, a lot of parents might hear that and go, what do you mean a third grader is buying his own food? And it's like, yeah, because we got to buy whatever we wanted to eat, because my mom knew that at that point that we would eat whatever we bought, right? So,
right.
I mean, she didn't let us go too far off the rails. But, you know, it's we also got, the responsibility, you know, to kind of figure out what our food was going to look like for the week. So that was pretty interesting. You know, on other food topics, I think it's, I love the idea of venison diplomacy. I love the idea of being able to talk about kind of these bigger, broader reaching topics, because the food is the thing that brings that conversation to light. So, you know, these days for me hunting, my primary source for hunt or primary reason for hunting is probably adventure. But a very close second is the fact that I hope to always share that food with folks, and talk about where I was and what it looked like and, you know, what we're doing for the animals around that area and kind of deep dive into some of those conversations, with whoever we're sharing meals with. So yeah.
How involved are you in the kitchen now? Is it kind of step 1, 2, 3, here's my food, or are you beginning to break in with your options now that you have? Are you trying to do new things?
So, full disclosure, in my house, like I'm the grill master, if you will. And then generally speaking, my wife is, she's really the one who deep dives into the food, and I thoroughly appreciate it because we love eating all kinds of different things. And so these days, now that she's become a hunter herself, she's pretty keen on trying to make, like last week she made, like an Indian butter chicken dish. But she did it with the antelope that she shot herself. She's definitely the one that's getting a little bit wild and crazy with the meals. Usually if it's my turn, my go-tos are kind of, turkey carnitas and, or just burgers.
Whatever fancy name to taco you want to add to it. Here you go.
Yeah. Totally. So she's, but I thoroughly appreciate everything that she does in the kitchen because it's some fantastic stuff. So
I think a partnership in the kitchen is a good thing because
where
I can go off on the rails, where I want to, like, I'm already thinking of a recipe that I want to do, not today, not tomorrow, but I'm thinking like, next week because we're having a certain set of friends over or something. Like I'm going to start sourcing the materials or sourcing the ingredients. Now my wife is like, listen, it is Tuesday. We have soccer practice in 45 minutes and we got to get something on these plates. And so to see her do magic with say a pound of ground or to be like, hey, head out to the grill, get these things fired up because we're going to be doing, like you said, like carnitas or we're going to be doing fajitas or whatever. She's like, she can do that midweek stuff and be like, what do I want to say? Like a meal in 30 minutes. Like she could write a book on just that. Whereas, dad starts cooking something, right around 3 o'clock in the afternoon and maybe we'll eat by 6:30.
Yep.
So it's good to have that balance that you have.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I appreciate the Instapot these days. We definitely go strong on the Instapot. We also go strong on the air fryer. Because it just cuts down the time on some of that stuff.
Big lover of the Instapot. I want to get old school and go with the old one. My wife is still hesitant on putting a bomb in our kitchen. So, we're going for the electric pressure cooker. The air fryer, I haven't jumped in on that. What are you making? What are you making in your air fryer?
I mean, any vegetable that you would roast. It's the same thing, right? It's just a convection oven. It's just a much smaller convection oven. So, if you were roasting potatoes, and that takes you 45 minutes to an hour or whatever, they're done in the air fryer in like 10 minutes.
So it's just like speed and convenience of that little roasted goodness you were going after.
Totally. Any vegetable, like these days we've been doing a lot of kale and beets in there. And so it gives you just like a crunchy kale and beet salad real quick. It takes all 5 minutes to do it in there. So, honestly, turkey schnitzel, if we're doing that, you make it in there and it's just like, it's much less oil use. I think it's a little bit healthier for you. You're not totally dunking it in grease. But we use it all the time.
Gotcha. Are you making basically beet chips at that point? I'm a big beet lover too. Are you keeping it like thicker cut?
Well, I'd say they're not super thick, but they're also, they've got a little chew to them. They're not totally dry and chips, right? They're like, I don't know. They're pretty just like good consistency.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
A little more chewy, a little bit more crispy on the outside.
Yep.
Kind of switching gears now. We're going to get into the outdoors here a little bit. I mean, we're still going to stay with the kitchen here, but what's your favorite critter to chase?
I would say that it's elk. I've been chasing the longest in the woods. And ultimately with a bugle in hand, you know, in September during archery season, it's just that turkeys are fantastic. That's my next favorite, because of the call and response that you get to have with those animals. But ultimately the call and response of a bull elk is just so much more impressive because it's literally, you know, 1,000-pound animal versus a 25-pound animal. So when that bull is standing, you know, 5 feet away from you on the other side of a pine tree, trying to figure out where you're at, and it's bugling and chuckling and doing all its things. I don't think there's a rush. Any other hunting has a rush like that. So that's definitely my favorite.
Gotcha. I'm getting excited because 2022.
Nice.
I've got 1 point in, and this year I put in another point, and we're going to be doing the archery elk ourselves. I'm at the point now where
Colorado or somewhere else?
Montana. We're going Montana.
Montana.
Nice. Still looking on map placements and stuff. We're a year out, so we're still real vague on that, but it's I don't want to say it's like a brotherhood, but there are four guys and we've all been like, all right, we're putting our money in. And so now I've got $50 down on a point, and now it's like, oh, I'm invested. You know, granted, there's going to be a lot more investment that needs to happen.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you know, hearing you talk about that being your favorite critter, it's like, oh man, it puts shivers on my spine because that's going to be something that I get a chance to experience. I'm at the point though where if whatever legal critter walks out, that's going to be the one that I'm going to take. I know a couple of my buddies have aspirations for, you know, the big bugling elk, but I was like, hey, if I can walk out of there with a meat animal, I'm going to be, you know, just happy as a clam at that point.
Definitely. Never pass up a shot on an elk. That's you want a freezer full for sure. Particularly if it's your first time, I think, any elk will give you a fantastic experience. And if you're actually trying to do it with a bow, I would never pass up a shot on an animal. So
yeah, we're diving in hard, but at the same time, I'm like, oh man, even just the adventure, I think, like you were talking about being, adventure sports, just enjoying it, just the camaraderie, I think that we're going to build as the four of us. I think it's going to be one of those things, like, even if we see them or we don't even see them, we just hike around Montana for a week. Hey, that's a lot of fun.
It is. It totally is. Yeah.
So now the favorite critter to eat, you were talking about turkeys there for a little bit. Is it a toss up between elk and turkeys, or is there something else in there that's your favorite?
No, turkeys definitely. I think turkey definitely takes the cake. I really love like essentially what I call a chicken sandwich is made out of turkey, right? Like a turkey schnitzel sandwich is probably one of my favorite meals. Piece of cheese, couple of pickles, and some barbecue sauce, and it's just like
it's the same idea as Chick-fil-A, but way better.
But way better, exactly. Yep. It's and it's so easy. I'll say that turkey, like making carnitas off of the legs is also really good, because I will like nail some tacos made out of that stuff as well. So that's I'd say that's definitely my favorite. That being said, we've ate a lot of elk backstrap this week, and you can never go wrong with that stuff. So, it's a toss up, man. There's so much good wild game, if it's cooked right, that it's hard to pinpoint one thing as being that much better than others.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, I mean, you get into this thing where you have investment into, so it's like whatever critter that you just hunted, like, you know what? That's now my favorite, because when you taste it, you're tasting the experience. You're tasting the sweat and tears that went into it. So, yeah, I can definitely see how you're going with that, where it's you got favorites, but at the same time, like, it might even depend on what critter you're pulling out of the freezer at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, we're going to jump a little deeper, and we might hear more about these carnitas, just that you've mentioned it twice, but we're going to get into the crescendo of our show here. This is the two-dish breakdown. This is where I give you a scenario, and you got to fill in with what dish is going to be made and the ingredients that are going to go along with it, and spare your no details when it comes to this. Do you think you're ready for these two?
I don't know if I am. This might be a bit of a challenge for me, but she'll try.
Gotcha. Well, this first one I think is going to fall right up your alley, since you are developing some hunting camps, some mentorships. The scenario is you're making meal for folks who are interested in hunting but are unsure of the taste of venison. What are you making? Are you going to tone down the venison flavor or not?
I'm making a burger with Tony C's in it, and having them dress it however they want. I think that the burger is so common to people that if you put a little bit of that Tony C's seasoning in there, it might tone down, some of the flavor, but not really. I think it just makes it better. Everyone loves to dress their burger the way they'd love to dress it. So, I think ultimately that just provides people a better burger experience than they've had in the past. And it's a really great first meal. It's very approachable.
Good. I like where you went with the approachable bit, that, whether it's going to get toned down or not, it's something that they're familiar with. And I mean, you can make a patty out of anything. I mean, I've seen salmon burgers before. Not that I would, I'd rather go with a filet on one of those at that point. But at the same time, like making it approachable that someone who's interested in it, like, oh, I could have this burger like every other night. Like, yeah, this is something that's totally feasible. Are you making your own burger, or is that something you're shipping out to the processors?
The last couple of years, I'd say the processor is taking care of that for me. I just haven't had a lot of time, honestly. I usually process all my own animals, but the last few years have been so busy during hunting season that I'll essentially take the big pieces and kind of we generally keep a lot of things whole. But I'll cut out kind of the roast that I know that I want, and then ultimately everything else goes to a processor. This year we finally are working with some different brands, so I've actually landed a couple of like the bigger grinders and stuff. So yes. Next year we'll probably do it ourselves.
Horsepower in the grinder world is key. Yeah, it is all about slugging that meat through that hole.
Yep. Yeah. So ultimately, unfortunately, because of time, and because there's literally a meat processor like a block and a half around the corner from my house.
It's just so convenient. He does that every day.
It is very convenient. Yeah. So, and they do a fantastic job. So I trust them to handle my meat with care. So
good deal. Yeah. Now, are you cutting in any pork fat, beef fat, or are you just saying, hey, grind this up for me? Just going the straight elk or the straight venison on that?
No, we cut in beef fat. We hold a, not a totally kosher house, but we have we don't eat pig in the house. So, I cut beef fat into it, usually around 5%. So it just keeps it together a little bit, gives it a little fat to sizzle on the grill. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah. I'm German and Scott in my heritage. So pork is a mainstay. So I always go with pork fat on mine, but it's one of those things that if I get to cut in, I get a choice, and it's like, I just really like that. The porkiness that goes in, it's not smoked. It's not like throwing in bacon, but having, like you just said, if I can make a patty, I don't have to mash that sucker together. I don't have to add an egg, the fat in there, just a little bit, either from whatever, like you said, you were using the beef, just holds that patty much better. So cutting in some of that, it's always a good option.
Yeah.
All right, the last one here. Mateng, somehow this is going to be your last meal. We know that you're going to die tomorrow. Now, this is a scenario. You're not actually going to die tomorrow, but you have one request to be your last meal. You get any meal that you want. It can be made with anything that you want. So this here's where, you know, you having choices, now you have the ultimate choice that you need to make. What is going to be your last supper?
Oh, it's funny. The first thing I'd say is a brownie sundae. We eat a lot of brownie sundaes around here. It's probably going to be elk backstrap. I think the quintessential kind of like meat and potatoes meal. I think that is that's if it's going to be wild game, it's going to be elk backstrap with like mashed potatoes and some sort of vegetable. That's pretty much my big go-to any day of the week.
That warms my Midwest heart right there. Meat and potatoes.
Yep. Yep. Totally. If it wasn't that, it'd be Thai food. It'd be drunken noodles with something in it.
There you go.
But yeah. Yep. So yeah, it's hard to compete against an elk backstrap for deliciousness. So yeah.
Yeah, I've had little bits here and there. You know, some friend will come back and be like, hey, either I hunted this or, you know, my father-in-law or whatever. Like it works its way into the circles. And to get a chance to have one of those beautiful backstrap steaks is like, oh, man, it is a super treat. I think that's the big motivation why I want to jump into that whole thing and jump out there and do it myself is I want to be able to score some of that. So no, I think you've hit the nail right on the head when it comes to that being the last thing that goes in your mouth on earth being an elk backstrap. That sounds about right.
Yeah, totally.
Well, hey, thank you so much for giving us some time here. I wanted to leave just a few more minutes here at the end because I want to have you point my listeners where can we get involved or where can we find more about Hunt to Eat. And you were alluding that you've got some exciting stuff coming down the pipeline here.
Yeah, totally. It's kind of it's the most exciting time of year for us. So in the world of Hunt to Eat, I'm excited to say that we've got new partners at the brand. So if folks are familiar with all the good work that Project Upland does, and the owners there are Chet and AJ from the Northwoods Collective. They've come on as partners at Hunt to Eat, and so. We really are deep diving in, no longer are we just an education and apparel company, but we're also a media company. So as this podcast hits your listeners' ears, they should come to the website and think about subscribing to the new Hunt to Eat magazine. We'll have a quarterly, roughly 96 page magazine coming out. The first one will hit your mailboxes October 1st. Thereabouts, and then it'll continue on kind of February and then quarterly thereafter. Hunt to Eat magazine will have everything, stories from our community, recipes, stories about conservation issues, hunting stories. It'll just be a really good place to get everything from homesteading to gardening to hunting tactics. The whole nine yards will kind of be in there. And you can definitely expect to kind of see us carry that Hunt to Eat ethos of sharing stories from folks who probably haven't had their stories told often in the hunting industry. We'll be covering all that stuff. And in the first month, we'll have a pretty sweet sweepstakes going on. So if you subscribe to the magazine, you'll be entered to win a bunch of fun, pretty rad gear from a bunch of our partners. And then we've got roughly four podcasts coming out in the next couple months here. So just kind of stay tuned to social media. We've got a homesteading podcast. If you're into kind of thinking about your piece of property as a place to grow your own food. We've got a couple of chefs coming out with a cooking podcast, cooking and foraging podcasts. We've got two of our longstanding kind of contributors, Casey and Paul. They'll have the Hunt to Eat show. Which will have it'll be built on our pillars. So similarly, like fast paced conversations around community, real food and conservation. And then there's a couple other things coming down the pipe as well. So Yeah, if you go to huntteat.com, you can see all that stuff. We've got a ton of camps this fall. So if folks are, you know, if you're into hunting already and you're looking for a new species, you might check out some of our upland camps that we've got going on. Or if you're brand new to hunting, or you, you know, you have friends or family member where they're super brand new to it and they want to go to a place where someone can give them a kind of full weekend of education around hunting, then send them our way as well. So yeah, and if you care at all about what I have to say, you can find me on Instagram, Mating_Patellis, pretty easy. So yeah.
Wow, you heard it here first, folks, that Hunt to Eat is gonna blow up. Media company, they're coming out with a new magazine, they've got podcasts in the works and a show as well. Well, I do have an open space for bathroom reading. So I think the Hunt to Eat magazine is going to have a good spot on that shelf there. So that'll be
good. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Well, hey, Mating, this has been an awesome hour. Thank you so much. I'm going to have you hold on as I send the folks on out.
Sounds good. Thanks for listening, folks.
Well, hey, you heard it here, folks, that we're all about our passions. We're all about trying to use the most out of our wild game. And here's a gentleman who has a company that started out with modest wares and has really turned wild game into a renaissance, giving hunters and anglers a chance to showcase their wild harvest. So folks, as you're going along and thinking, man, I need a new t-shirt, you might want to head over to Hunt to Eat. But at the same time, there's going to be a heck of a lot more over there that you can check out. But whatever you do, always keep your knives sharp.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.